Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
And Rich Hudson.
Hello.
On a Friday evening, no less. Now, it might be the end of January / the beginning of February when they listen to this, but that's not going to stop us doing 2020 gaming predictions now, is it?
Why would it?
As I say, why would it stop us?
Well, because everyone else did them at the start of January. That's when I was...
2019 predictions. Screw it, let's do that.
But yeah, just go all the way back. I think the Xbox One will be really good. What do you think? If you're looking forward to the snares, I don't know. Anyway, we put together some predictions, a handful of each, and they're all big old talking points, so we'll see how we go. I'm going to open things up with, I think that the Xbox's cross-platform, cross-generation, forwards and backwards compatibility combined is going to kill the Series X sales. What do you guys think?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, it's weird, isn't it? We've spoken at length about the next console generation effectively making, not making it like, you know, the be all and end all of console cycles, but in the sense that, you know, it's not going to be a generation like we've ever seen before. And yeah, looking at basically having released the Series X and then just going to this and then just being like, made our previous bit of technology obsolete.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I love stuff that has backwards compatibility, but it's that idea of the forwards compatible stuff where, like, if you already have an Xbox One, you don't need a Series X. Like, I know they have said that, you know, there's always going to be meaningful upgrades for them, like Halo Infinite and whatever you're going to play on there that'll run a lot better, but you can play a base version of that game on your original Xbox One, which I just think that's a weird way to go about launching a new console cycle.
I feel like it's more going to be a transitionary period, because we had that with between the 7th and 8th gen where a lot of games were being released on both platforms. You know, most of the time, yeah, they were very watered down versions of those games, but they still supported it. But I don't think this will be an ongoing thing throughout the course of the next generation. Maybe for a year they're going to do the forwards compatibility thing and say that if you're buying anything on the Series X or anything releasing on the Series X between holiday 2020 and holiday 2021, that it'll be available on the Xbox One as well. Doing that outright is basically business suicide. I don't think Microsoft are that stupid.
No, they've said that it will be temporary in as much as like 3 or 4 years of this way, and then eventually it'll come
across.
That's
like half a generation.
I know, and it's like, I mean, I get that at some point they need, I don't know if they need to do these sort of big gambles, but it feels like they are, like they think that they're in a good position where they want to have this whole like platform agnostic thing where no matter where you're coming in on the Xbox family, you can enjoy everything that they have.
Yeah.
But that seems kind of...
It's like the antithesis of what they started off the last generation with. And I feel as though gradually over time, people have kind of been won over by, you know, Xbox, whether it be, you know, Game Pass or whatever. As though it's basically their attempt at basically continuing the goodwill they generated over the past few years and basically making Xbox as accessible as possible to so many different people and trying to keep the brand together as a whole, which is an interesting approach.
Yeah, yeah. How much do you think it's a reflection or like a necessity? Because like you said, it's almost the obsolete thing. Like this was the first generation where we had like half-step systems, like minus something like the Mega Drive 32X or something.
I mean,
like,
they had the console revisions that were more for improving things wrong with the initial version, because there's never been a console, I think, in history that was perfect from the off, except maybe the PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
I think they need to be changed at all.
I'd go with PS2.
But yeah, I can see why they're doing it, because a lot of people, whenever we do any content on next-gen systems, the comments, there's a lot of people always saying, we don't want it. Mm. We don't want a new system. And mm-hmm. I get that. I'm excited to see what comes of the Series X and the PS5. But unless there's something that is going to draw me to buying a system, I don't care.
It does feel like, I mean, even at the start of this generation, people were saying, like, we don't necessarily need them. And obviously the first couple of years, like 2013 to 2015, for me, the generation didn't really kick off until something like The Witcher 3 or Metal Gear 5 sort of kicked mm-hmm. in. 2013 and 2014 didn't have, like, massive next-gen titles. Like, think, like, The Order and Knack and Watch Dogs were massive letdowns. And it just took so long before something was like, okay, this can fundamentally not be made on the last generation of systems. And it was weird. So I think that, like, the generations only really, like, sort of missed out on those first couple of years. And then now we're seeing things like The Last of Us 2 and Cyberpunk. And it's like, okay, this is clearly what these systems are capable of. So why not just run with that for a bit longer?
Yeah. No, I have nothing else to add, really. It's a case of, like, initially when this was all announced, I was kind of like, well, I don't really feel the need to upgrade. Then my PlayStation 4 started making all sorts of creaky, croaky noises, and it got me very anxious, and it's still hanging in there. Mm. Like, every time I think I threaten it with death, it just comes back to life and just shuts up, because it's like, I don't want to go to the scrap heap, Ewan.
You don't want to do that, Ewan.
Exactly, and now I'm kind of in the space now where I'm very much enthusiastic about upgrading. I've never gotten a new console, a brand new console from a new generation, literally the year it's released. I've always waited a year.
Yes.
Oh, he's one of those intelligent buyers.
Yeah, I usually wait a year before I actually pop on.
Midnight launch, give me the broken one. But I now must play it immediately.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm of that opinion now, or maybe if I just get the new PlayStation, that'll be the good choice to have, because it's so weird for me as someone who's hopped across both PlayStation and Xbox. I'm kind of caught in an awkward position with this cross backwards compatibility thing. I think if I get the next PlayStation, I can get an Xbox One, which can run all my old Xbox games and Xbox 360 games, which will probably be the best of both worlds, because the Xbox One will be dead cheap in a few years' time, and I'll have the PlayStation 5, and then I can have that, and then have the old Xbox, and I'll have my both libraries on two consoles, which is really, really good.
It's basically what you're doing, Scott, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. I try to keep up with everything. I mean, I'll end up getting everything, but the backwards and forwards compatible thing does mean that, like, if you have got a legacy of games, which, like, I think a lot of us do, then it makes sense that whatever you sort of get.
It's more just to give you time, but yeah, I don't think it's going to be a thing consistent throughout the generation. If it is, then that's a very weird approach.
Yeah, it makes it not as necessary as something like the PS5, which already has a bunch of exclusives. So you and your first massive prediction was that you think E3 2020 will be the last E3.
Yeah, I mean, E3, what are you doing, mate? Like, honestly, what is the point of E3 at this point? It's just like, has been E3. That's like, it's so
good. Has B3.
It's just a case of, I feel as though we've been watching the slow decline of this. What was a fun industry event that I felt as though all players could kind of get behind and appreciate and get involved in the hype, you know, whether it be the Just Dance dancers or the lad coming on and playing the flute for you know, Ghost of Tsushima. And I feel as though we've always had the theatrics of E3. It's always been the quintessentially video game event where we can laugh at it, we can have fun, we can get excited for new projects. But as other developers and publishers have gradually, you know, leapfrogged the event to basically, you know, share their things, whether it be through Nintendo Directs or PlayStation, you know, PlayStation
Experience.
Yes.
Yeah. And then plus Sony have dropped
that.
And then the Xbox will, here's the games things. Mm-hmm. I feel as though now that we have those, E3 has kind of been rendered obsolete, which is quite sad, but also they've kind of egged on their own demise, whether it be, you know, through some really kind of just weird kind of strategies to get new people involved, and then also the whole ESA leak last year where, you know, basically they doxed all their journalists who were registered with them, and they were like, oops, sorry about that. It's just not...
What happened again?
It just feels as though it's not a fit for purpose.
Let me read you some quotes. So this was a big thing last September 2019, a leaked email that was doing the rounds internally at ESA is in regards to how they want to get people excited for the future of E3. And it's the most PR buzzword thing you could put. If you told a computer to algorithmically generate a corporate email, it would very much be this. The ESA going forward suggest exclusive and appointment only activations for select attendees who will create buzz and FOMO, brackets, fear of missing out. So they just want to manufacture things that you can only be at E3 before. They want to call on the power of social good. The power of social good to offer validation, attention, and excitement across media outlets beyond the video game space. And also,
they mean us,
to check in. Yeah, they want to make sure they use positive chits for future use to combat negative video game stories.
What's a chit?
A chit is apparently like some sort of social media currency that you can cash in.
This is such a cynical
clout.
Street cred. It's a cynical approach to, I think, how people like of our age, of our generation, think.
It's the kind of person that would get a t-shirt that says gamer with an arrow pointing upwards.
and then don't just, come in, know, gamer at work.
Yeah, exactly. Like just one of those. Like it's E3 merchandise. The person.
I've seen your tattoo, Rich. Don't worry.
We've all got one.
Stop
of them.
Stop looking at me, changing you. God.
Somewhere on our person, but I think that like they. I mean, to some degree, they have to do that whole PR approach and okay, how are we going to make this a business and how are we going to get people involved? And activation, in terms of a definition, is just the fancy PR word that they give to the first day that something goes live for a new PR campaign that they've been planning. And obviously they want to make sure that E3 is the place for all those things. But for me, the fun of E3 was the sort of nerdy, quirky, dumb stuff that we used to watch live. Like you said, the performances.
Did we even have the Just Dance dances last year?
I didn't watch Ubisoft's thing, but that's always something I look forward to.
Yeah.
When you get the big panda coming in with his baton.
I want the
leading him in. Yeah. Just Dance 2021, baby.
Usually they would plan like, you know, two or three different things for that show that would get memed or would get like shared around. And like for me, as much as I think that E3's day, I think a lot of the hype around E3 has kind of become what the Game Awards now is. Whereas like E3 kind of felt quite tragic last year, and like Sony are pulling out, and like it just doesn't feel like, I mean, their rates apparently to hold booths on the show floor are way more than they've ever been before, because I guess they have to charge more now that less people are there to try and milk the remaining amount of people that are still going. So it just feels like I love what E3 represents as this big media event, but I don't necessarily think even they know what they have anymore, which like especially when like quotes like that come out and it's like we're just going to try and make it as nakedly business as possible. But would you guys miss it if E3 went away, or do you think it's ready to die?
I think there's more than enough to take over from it. You know, we've got Nintendo Directs, we've got State of Play, we've got the XO19 that was in November last year. And you know, all the other outlets are doing things. I think the only people that don't are, I guess, EA, Bethesda, and kind of Devolver, who show up at E3.
Oh, God, let Devolver do every single thing.
They can just do whatever they want. But, like, we are basically still covered for every other sort of outlet. Mm-hmm. And I think with the huge prominent rise in social media and stuff like that, you know, E3 is kind of, it's not necessarily, and trying to drum up FOMO for an event that isn't exactly like the easiest thing to get to, it's not exactly going to work. I can see why they think this is the approach they should take. Because, you know, yes, of course you look at it and go, oh, I wish I was at E3. When Rachel and I went to LA to do Kingdom Hearts 3's premiere event, like a week later, it was E3. And all the people who were there with all of the journalists were like, oh, we've seen you in a week for E3. And we're like, no, maybe fortunately not. Uh-huh. But like, that's about as close as I've ever been to like actually like proper FOMO like E3 for E3. Buzz. But at the end of the day, I can sit on the sofa in my pants at 1 a.m. and watch E3.
The beautiful
I don't
thing
need
is,
to be there. That's as the much thing. As it'd be cool.
You can do that for the Direct and the State of Plays and all the Xbox streams and everything anyway.
But I do feel as though they lack the pomp of E3. And I say pomp in inverted commas. I do mean, you know, the cringe. And I enjoy the cringe. I enjoy some really, you know, just cringe.
Random celebrity like, who's been pushed on.
Exactly.
What's this? Like a shoutcast demonstration.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just a shame, I feel, as though even if E3, the name continues after this year, I think it's all but dead in terms of what it stood for over the past, you know, two console generations. I feel as though this year, you know, we've still got a few people that will be there, obviously, but I'm certainly predicting that this year will be the year that E3, as we most frequently, or, you know, the E3 that we're most familiar with, rather, I feel as though that E3 is going to kick the bucket.
Yeah, I think in the release year of the PS5, the fact that Sony aren't there speaks volumes.
I think you're completely right.
Rich, one of your predictions was the new Switch, the premium 4K Switch.
Yes, sexy I think Switch. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Nope.
That's the opposite of the prediction.
Sexy Switch.
What?
It's a prediction that has become very prominent ever since the reveal of the Switch Lite, which was what, the summer? Because it released in September last year.
Yes. Sure.
They, you know, people were saying, oh, the Nintendo are going to release two new versions, which to some extent last year they kind of did, because they released the first revision of the Switch, the Red Box Switch, if you know of that, which was, you know, better battery life and just slightly better. Not obviously a big deal, like they didn't make a big song and dance about it, but musings going around that Nintendo are going to release a Switch Pro with, yeah, I don't know, better Joy-Cons, a 4K display or 4K output or whatever. But Nintendo's president, can't remember his name for the life of me, not Doug Bowser,
not Mr. Doug Bowser.
Nintendo of Japan, the OG Nintendo's president, have said
Mr. Nintendo
himself has said that Nintendo are not at all looking to release a new Switch in 2020, which I want to say they said that last year.
They've definitely said that, yeah.
But again, it might happen, it might not happen. But I think alongside the release of the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5, they don't need to. Because literally the other day, I think it might have been earlier this week, more reports have come out that Nintendo are killing it.
Oh, their sales are insane.
Continuing to kill it. Like the Switch Lite has probably sold a lot more than I think we all anticipated it to. I think it sold like 50 million units or something, which is nuts.
That robust console is going to always appeal to parents with
and,
kids.
You know, all in one at the moment, they say that, because what they said is we don't need to make a pro system. Right. Nintendo have never been a platform to make a pro system. They play with what they've got, and that's always been their strength. Because, you look at the Wii, and yes, it outputted it, you know, 320 pixels wide, because it basically was crap for its spec at the time.
Yeah.
But the whole experience you got from it was so incredible, and that's what Nintendo is still going for, because that's what they stand for.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't see why they would make one. I can understand why they'd make one, completely understand why they'd make one. Would I be tempted? Maybe. I was tempted by a Switch Lite for some reason.
Every other day, you were like, I'm going to get one.
I got my brother one for his birthday this year, and when it arrived at home, I unboxed it like, oh my god, this is so cool. Put it back in the box and wrap it for my brother. It's not mine, but it's like, oh, this is such a cool little system. I've got one, but
Me think in regards to the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X, it was very much that developers were struggling to get games out at stable frame rates and things like that. And it was like, well, on the console side, on the manufacturing side, like, we can make this half step system that will solve that problem, that will give you the increased RAM or whatever to solve that issue. I don't know the ins and outs of the technical speak, but apparently that was the big mandate behind it. Mm-hmm. Nintendo don't really seem to have that issue, because most stuff, even if it's Doom or Wolfenstein or even Witcher 3, can run on the Switch.
Yeah, like, optimizing for the Switch has been very, very big focus on a lot of, especially third party. Interestingly enough, not even first party, because Link's Awakening runs like poop on the Switch. The frame rate isn't as good as you think.
True,
The fact you can get Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which, I mean, to be honest, when you look at it, especially like the lighting engine and stuff, it's a stunning game.
I think it's lush,
and it runs at 60 FPS solid. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, stick with that. So that's kind of why I don't think Nintendo are going to release a Pro.
They definitely don't need to.
They could do. They might release a Pro bundle. They might release some Pro Joy-Cons, which, you know, people have been wanting for a long time. I know Hori released the Demon X Machina ones that Ryan in the office has got, which are like big chunky Joy-Cons. Like, that could be a thing. Mm-hmm. But as for a whole new hardware revision after the Switch Lite, I don't think so.
That's the thing. It's strange because they very much operate on their own timetable. Like, you know, they're in between the other console releases. Mm-hmm. And if we are getting the Series X and the PS5 this year, then it's like, what did Nintendo do? Just
and
hold
that's why
on.
That's, they've just said they're avoiding it. Mm. They're just not going to get involved. Because they don't need to. They're absolutely killing it. They don't need to put themselves up against the PS5 and the Series X, because nobody looks at those two consoles and then the Switch as well and say, what are you doing?
True.
Nobody's looked at that since maybe the big, really heavy console wars of the 7th gen when it's like, haha, the Wii's rubbish.
Yeah, I think
that
everyone
was the last
knows
time it really came into conversation.
Yeah, I guess people know Nintendo for being Nintendo. I would like Breath of the Wild in 4K, but they don't need to
that
do it.
That would be nice.
That would be lovely. Now, one of my other ones was, speaking of killing things, I think that Google are just going to discontinue the Google Stadia platform, which is to say...
We at all surprised.
I was going to say, that's like, it's barely alive at this point.
Keep on seeing adverts for it all the time, being like, hey, do you want to see hip young Zoomer Ninja play some Fortnite on the Stadia? Or
play some laggy. Play some
just like some really awkward pre-roll ads on YouTube. I maintain that Stadia was just a flex. It was a flex from Google just to be like, hey, we can do this.
Yeah,
we can do that. And maybe there was some sort of, you know, some delusion that they had in the back of their mind that this console, this system would work. Mm-hmm. But to me, in my head, it was always just a case of, yeah, we can do it. Let's just spend some money on it. And now, lo and behold, it's still, you know, it's not responded to anyone, because literally for the same reasons why everyone, you know, did not go for the Xbox One at the same time to begin with. You know, it always has to be online. You always have to have a ridiculous internet connection for it to work in the first place. Mm-hmm. It just felt to me like this is just a glorified tech demo that was released as a mass product.
Yeah, the biggest lie that Google always tells themselves is that the world will care just because it's Google. Me and Josh did a whole separate video breaking down a lot of the statistics around Google Stadia, but like the amount of Google projects that have died, Google Glass and Google Plus.
That's a fantastic website of just graveyard.
There's Google Graveyard, and there's killedbygoogle.com, which is archive everything that they've killed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And I think Stadia, like, as much as the thing is for me, when we sat in the office, when they first showed the first live stream, we watched it and it was like big announcement from Google. They're entering the gaming space and their whole thing was we're going to stream everything in. And it was kind of like, yeah, OK, I guess, but
do
I don't believe
to,
it.
Though?
Yeah, you have to. I don't believe you at all. Even watching the stage demo, which was later proved to be fake or whatever. It was like, OK, I just don't buy this at all. I don't know if streaming appeals to you guys at all. It just doesn't.
No,
to me.
The thing is, it's so unnecessary. Like, right. If I can have a disc and I can play it, put it in a console and I can own the game and I can play on it. I don't have to worry about any internet connection whatsoever. Of course you're going to choose that option. It's less faff. Mm-hmm. You're taking up less bandwidth anyway. It's ridiculous to me. It just feels like such a massive indulgence.
And like a Silicon Valley flex.
Exactly. Yeah. Like whoever came up with that, it feels though it was made in some sort of product development bubble where they were just like completely unaware.
Yeah, we're in Silicon Valley.
That,
we can download... You know, anything, yeah. any internet, any megabytes per second.
Yeah,
this is gonna work.
And I feel as though people who buy video games want convenience, and Stadia is the exact antithesis of convenience. Mm-hmm. It is just excess and indulgence.
That's the thing. It's like if it had worked, where it's like, because I mean, they were like, oh no, if as long as you have like 40 megabytes plus internet connection, you can stream this stuff in. And it's like, yeah, you can get it going, but there's still artifacting. This is you're still very much aware that you're playing a stream. You can't
input
really get away
lag.
From that. Yeah, input lag. And it's like something like that. It was for me. It's the same qualm that. The Kinect had, where it's like something like voice controlled stuff needs to work 100% of the time. And you know, the first time with voice controls, the first time you say something to your TV and it just doesn't acknowledge you, it's like
they're on Tom Clancy's End War, like Unit 5, move into position.
It's just like, you know, if those things can't be reliable that much, then you immediately feel like an idiot for even believing it for a second.
I just think it's fascinating. I mean, obviously, yeah, I think Ewan's right. It's just a big flex. Like, look at Google. Look at how big our internet dongs are.
dongle.
Yes. Our dongles are worldwide.
My dongcast. And... But it's like you look back at...
Nintendong.
Good.
For goodness sake.
It's very much Friday.
You look back at streaming tech in the past. You look at, like, the... I remember before I had my Xbox 360, I had a compact PC with a NVIDIA graphics chip in it that had the processor was rubbish, so I could barely play anything on it, but it got me into PC gaming. Well, I say I was already into PC gaming, but it got me into modern PC gaming back then. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I want to play other stuff. Like, I remember Portal 2 is coming out, and I was like, I can't play that on my PC. My PC is rubbish.
Right.
It will not manage that. And then OnLive was announced, and I was like, wow, this is wicked. And then the Ouya was announced.
Oh,
which
God.
Was also, all of this was all streaming stuff. You know, Android gaming, and you know, for the bare minimum, you can do that on a smart TV.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, and stuff like that.
In the end of the Bourne Ultimatum, when he learns about his past as an assassin,
source code.
But it's just like it's been tried.
Yeah,
it has been tried, and it doesn't matter how
how much you think it can succeed, it doesn't mean it will. Mm. Google, take a look at Cliff Bleszinski with Lawbreakers and Radical Heights.
Just because you
think it's going to work doesn't mean
it will.
You're both
got your brain stretch on right now. Yeah. I know. None of you can see this, but both Scott and Rich have got just flexing with their arms.
Now that we've gone audio only.
They're about
only.
To rip the back of their skulls out.
It's true. We've become the villains from Men in Black, but the truth is the reality of streaming platforms. Yes. But yeah, I don't know. I think with Stadia, it just, like I said, when that initial reveal thing came on, I think everybody, especially like watching the live chats and stuff, everyone was like, this isn't going to work. Mm. And they haven't been able to prove it. And obviously the reason that I went with this entire prediction is that all of their numbers have just gone down. The mm-hmm. amount of people downloading the app has like more than halved. It went from 400K down to 170K. The Destiny 2 player numbers is like 8,000, which the fact that Destiny 2 is free kind of is indicative of the amount of like Stadia users there are overall. So my thing is that I just think Google are just going to bin it off like they do with literally everything else. You and your second big prediction was Arkham Legacy being announced in March.
Yes, I think in terms of the way we were looking at this, we had the I think a lot of people on the internet are just big sourpusses complaining about the way this game is being teased, being like, oh, why are they being so cryptic? It's like, just
my account again.
Just enjoy the fun, man. Mm. Like, just enjoy the whole nonsense of it all. Just enjoy the fact that you got all these cryptic teasers going along. And to be fair, I mean, I'm kind of, you know, having someone who was, you know, I kind of basically grew into online circles through the Arkham fan community, so this is all like just like, oh yes, hook it back into my veins. I can relive my glorious teenage years. What a wild time they were going through all the Arkham City, Arkham Origins teasers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I feel as though the game's probably going to have a March announcement. I feel as though Arkham Knight was announced in the March, and it was originally slated to come out the same year before it was delayed until the June of 2015, because it was announced in March 2014. Mm-hmm. It was originally slated for a winter release and then got pushed back. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if this was announced for a winter release date this year. I feel as though Arkham probably is going to release this year. I mean, we've got Warner Brothers, I think, are pretty keen to have something come out at the end of the year. I know they have the Lord of the Rings game, Gollum thing. I think that's probably going to be next year.
God, yeah.
And I feel as though if they're going to release Arkham, it makes sense to do it within this time frame right
now.
Yeah,
it'll be a PS5, Xbox Series X launch title.
Yeah. I feel as though it'll be cross-gen.
I was going to say, I mean, one of the things, the Arkham Legacy thing has kind of been, I mean, Arkham Legacy is the rumor title. Yeah. This whole existence of the whole game is rumored. Well, I guess they did that Facebook thing.
It is confirmed.
With some logos. It's happening, but they haven't got out there and said it's going to be Arkham XYZ. But I think it'd be cool to drop the logo alongside something like the PS5 reveal, just to sort of tie it in. Do you guys think that they'll ditch the Arkham name, though, that it'll just be the next big Batman game, Batman franchise? Or is the Batman
I think it's too
Arkham
marketable.
Name
yeah,
worth continuing?
Even if it's not involved, I think they will then, I think it's more not necessarily to tie it into the narrative of what's happened so far, but more just to say it's part of this type of game.
Right,
yeah,
right,
okay. Exactly.
Because if you look at like Batman the Telltale series, you wouldn't, as much as it's called Batman, you wouldn't expect that to be part of Arkham, because you know it's not, because it doesn't say it's Arkham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Arkham is such a recognizable brand right now, I feel as though, in the same way I think where you'll see with the Spider-Man game and Marvel's Avengers, where they have the Marvels in front of it to distinguish it as like this is a video game type thing. Batman Arkham is such a unique brand. It's sub-brand in a way, and you know, I feel as though people Batman Arkham, the video game franchise. And you know, people will talk about how the name conventions of the titles are dead cringy or whatever. I feel as though it's kind of just a small price to play for the fact that, you know, they have a strong interpretation of the DC mythos, and they can factor in all these different things. And you know, when you get a Batman Arkham game, you're getting Rocksteady and Warner Brothers Montreal's vision of what the Batman series looks like. So I still think it'll be Arkham in the title. It just makes too much sense for it to be, you know, they've got the Arkhamverse coined as well, so
that's
it just makes too much sense for them to drop. If they dropped it right now, I'd be convinced they'd be doing a complete Batman reboot, which is still possible. They could totally do that. But in terms of building off what the past four games have done, the past four main releases rather, it makes too much sense for them to drop.
I'm going to drop a sub prediction, and I'm going to predict that I hope they do ditch the Arkham name. I want them to do something new, only because I think I'm just a sucker for new stuff. I want them to just do something new. I don't think they should be tied to a like you said, the Arkhamverse, like an established canon, which already got a little bit convoluted in Origins in terms of, well, if he knew this ability before, then why is he unlocking it again in Asylum? And obviously it's because video games. Yeah, and it's like, it is hand waved, like, you can hand wave it away. But I would like them to maybe have a clean slate, especially because Montreal are going to be making this their own going forward. Assumedly, Rocksteady aren't going to be coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the fact that they've been building up this universe through four games now. Like, we've had so many references to the Justice League, to Superman, to this grand world outside of Gotham that is still waiting to be tapped into. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that even Rocksteady could probably are well within their rights to do something non-DC related. I believe the main rumor right now is that it could be Justice League, not just Superman. So right. mm-hmm. I feel as though if they're going to stay in the DC universe, which Warner Brothers would be very keen for them to do, mm. and they were posting adverts for new positions the other day as well, mm-hmm. I think it's definitely going to be a DC game.
But what if Warner Brothers weren't announcing just one game? They're announcing two, and ooh. I'm going to just quickly throw out there.
They could literally do the Arkham game on, not to cut you off, but they could do the Arkham game for this generation and then have Justice League for the next gen.
Very true. Wasn't even saying one of those two. Right. I was like, okay, maybe a third one in the ring, then, which was one of just a very quick sub thing about mm. predictions about Warner Brothers and then tying E3 in mm. again. Second year in a row, Harry Potter RPG.
Oh,
Warner Brothers.
That is long overdue.
For goodness sake.
We know it could be
a launch title for the next console.
They put the video down, man.
We all know it's real. The title that I came up and I put in the video is Magic Awakened is a real title, but it's a Japanese Harry Potter card game on mobile.
Oh, okay.
So the name was real. Okay. Just not for the RPG, but the RPG is definitely.
You can go to our channel and check out the What Culture Gaming channel and watch
everything we know about Harry Potter RPG. I didn't call it Magic Awakened in the title.
Will there be plumbing?
What?
Will there be plumbing?
Plumbing?
In this Harry Potter game.
Why is there plumbing?
It's a joke about the excrement and how they vanish away the poop.
Right.
Oh, I see what you did.
My mind went straight to, wait, is the basilisk getting around the pipes again?
Nah, I bet you all the viewers knew what I was on about
good.
Then.
Yeah, okay. We don't have
let us know
anymore.
On the Twitter. Back.
They'll know. Either way, the Harry Potter thing seems like, I mean, there's in-engine footage of it. It's very much, pretty much there.
Warner Brothers put their foot down on us, so it's like, well, that just confirms it.
That's not real, guys, which means it's definitely real. Rich, your last one, which you just did a video about, was the idea of the Xbox Series X being a PC.
Yes, honestly, probably the proudest work I've done ooh. Here. I'm very, very proud.
Even the zombies video is
even more so than my zombies videos that get no views. But
we love them.
Yeah.
We love them really.
But no, I did. I wrote this. I had this thing. I've had this kind of idea for a while, and then more and more stuff came about, and the stars aligned, and it was like, right. I think the Xbox Series X is going to be a pseudo PC when it releases in. I'm gonna say November. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so basically, yeah, you can watch the video on the gaming channel, or you can look at it on the website. And basically, I turned around and said, right, with the way that the PC marketplace is going, the way that Microsoft have had approaches towards their player base as well as their PC consumer base, because admittedly they are Microsoft, mm-hmm. And I think that the Series X is going to blur the line / bridge the gap, everything between the console space, at least on the Xbox side, and PC, mm-hmm. and the Series X will become something that you can turn it into whatever you want it to be.
Okay.
So you can play it as a console. As the something I was very proud of, actually, the Lockhart and Anaconda stuff that I know we've discussed on podcasts in the past, mm-hmm. That they're actually two different retail units.
Yes.
So one of them is a console form factor, the other is a PC form factor. So one comes with a controller, which you bung under your TV, jobs are good, and that's what it is. Mm-hmm. The other one comes with a keyboard and mouse, and you plug it into your desk, and it works like a PC. It runs a version of Windows.
This is your theory.
This is my theory. Yes, this isn't confirmed. But it can run Steam and all this sort of thing, which was another rumor going around about the Series X. Mm. So I think, the lines could be blurred between a console and a PC with the system. But if you are somebody that's like, no, I don't want PC at all, if you're like Scott Telford here,
yep.
who refuses to move sliders at all, even though...
I don't want to do V-Sync, Rich.
Even though I keep telling him...
but he loves that KK slider.
I keep telling him that most games now just go, wait, your PC's this? Cool, okay, already preset.
I've got a Mac, mate. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's what happens when you try and use a Mac for gaming. Trust me, I know. But if you want to use it as a console, you can do. If you want to use it as a PC, you can do. If you want to buy the console version and turn it into a PC, you also can do that. And I think it's got a lot of legs. As for whether it ends up being real, it's a big stretch. Mm-hmm. And there's a very, very, very high chance that Microsoft, they then continue what they're doing, saying, hey, here's an Xbox Series X, here's your console, do that, here's a new game for it, oh, by the way, it's on PC as well, because we like you both. Mm-hmm. Maybe they won't bridge the gap, but I think it's an interesting theory, and as I said, I'm very proud of of what I've written.
Definitely, you should check out definitely check out the video if you get time. I think it's weird with that thing, because is this just the next logical step of them going like, okay, all the exclusives are available on PC day one as well,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, it's almost like Xbox fans, or they're trying to mold Xbox fans to being this sort of little guinea pig holding pen for people that eventually become full-on PC owners, because at the end of the day, that is the parent company anyway. It's Microsoft.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what something I brought up in this article, the idea that just because they'll be transferring people over to PC, which means they won't necessarily be buying games from their own storefront, because they're getting stuff off Steam, off Epic, off GOG, mm-hmm. off Origin, off Uplay or whatever, mm-hmm. they would still be on their platform because they'd still be running Windows. They would still be buying Microsoft games because, with the release of Halo Master Collection on Steam, mm-hmm. I'm almost certain that every first-party PS Xbox exclusive will be available on the Xbox app and Steam here on out, because they're embracing the platform. It's mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, the whole player base is on Steam for PC. We may as well stick with Steam.
Yeah, I mean
even the Xbox app is great. Game Pass is fantastic. I can be in the boat of, yes, Game Pass, because I've got it on PC as well. Uh-huh. And, you know, that's fine. But if they're going to embrace Steam as well, I mean, the internet went into collective meltdown when they announced the Master Chief Collection. So they know they've got an audience there who are already dedicated to that potential. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Yeah, as I said in the video, I know there are a lot of console people out there who be like, oh, PC, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Get this away from me.
That was my reaction when you wanted to do a video on it. Oh, God, Rich.
Again, they could make it in such a way that it's not the case that you need to go down that route. But if you want to, you can. And mm-hmm. there's the seeds have already been laying on the Xbox One and the PS4, because you can use a keyboard and mouse. As long as the devs put it in as a usable input method, you can use it on games. Modern Warfare, you can play with a keyboard and mouse. Mm-hmm. So as I said, you can put your Xbox One on a desk, plug it into a monitor and use it as almost a PC.
Don't want to get owned by people with their bloody mouse and keyboards on multiplayer.
Like that time when we were all playing Modern Warfare
filter
together.
Filter it out.
On St. Petrograd or whatever it was called. Getting our asses kicked.
That was definitely a good time for me, not getting shot but in the back, Rich.
I think it's an interesting route that Microsoft could go down. Again, I'm not expecting it to go that way, but I think it's a really interesting way. And I was genuinely, when the video went live, I had a moment of going, okay, here we go. Let's see what the reaction to this is. And honestly, everyone has been really like, oh, it's actually quite an interesting idea.
Yeah.
And I think that just further reaffirms to me, as I've always said, that the whole console war stuff is just dying.
Oh, maybe. I think it's good fun, but if anyone people take it too seriously, I'm not.
Well, exactly. And I think most people have matured past that. Yeah. So this idea, this different concept, this different approach to how gaming's going to evolve over the next generation, you know, people have been more willing to hear about it.
I almost fell for the Steam box. So, you know.
It was a very good idea. But this is, as I've said, this is it could be almost a spiritual successor to Steam boxes. Intel and Razer are doing their own mini PCs that are very simple to upgrade, which is another thing I said could happen with the Series X. I mean, I know we had the back IO leaked supposedly for the Series X, which didn't really sort of correlate with what I'd suggested could happen. But again, that was a leak. Could be rubbish.
Maybe. Mr. Ewan, would you buy a little Xbox PC?
No.
I'm bleeding my heart.
This isn't like a case of like, again, it isn't for me. Like a case of like, I have what I need, and then what I don't need is a PC. I think it's a great idea in terms of being able to basically have a very versatile product. For me, the only disturbing truth behind this Rich Hudson's Xbox theory.
Rich Hudson isn't telling you.
I'd be terrified of having all my multiplayer lobbies be filled with people with sweaty mice and keyboards who are just...
Well, if you play Modern Warfare, that can happen. And, you know, interestingly, when we have been playing crossplay, it's not been as...
Oh,
horrific.
It was blasphemy. I mean, to be fair, I absolutely hated Modern Warfare anyway, so I binned it in like, after like a month.
Going with the very stereotypical approach of thinking, I'm going to poon all the noobs, I'm going to kick some ass, and it wasn't as split of a battlefield as I thought.
I mean, I held my own, but I definitely noticed when someone was just like, and I was like, oh wow, you've just lasered to me in a second.
And then you get back in the lobby and see on the leaderboard, yep, they're using a mouse. I mean, I think it's more of a taking the plunge, and I don't consider the cross-play features of Modern Warfare to be a failure. I think it's a really good thing, which I know we have also discussed in the past.
Yeah, I do think it's fascinating, like thinking about, like, you know, from a console perspective, if you're a diehard console fan who's someone who, like me, who's only bought consoles over time, the reason I didn't go on a PC was because of all the customization side of it, and I just wanted to just play the thing. And so that was like, well, you know, the allure of PC is this more powerful, like the potential for more power. So I was like, okay, Steambox is like, you know, PC quality graphics and everything will just run, but with the simplicity of a console. And it's like, you know, that's potentially the best middle ground between where the Xbox is and where a full-on PC, like a custom rig is. So I think there's a potential for that, and like I think it makes a hell of a lot of sense, especially when Phil Spencer said that they do want to do multiple Xbox SKUs as well. So maybe you guys can let us know what you think. If you can find us on social media platforms. I almost said, let us know what you think down in the comments. They don't exist anymore. There's no comments anymore because we're not on YouTube. So you have to come find us on Twitter.
Listening.
But it'll be lovely. And for now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Parson.
Goodbye.
And Rich Hudson.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
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 Bye. Nice little song there, Ewan.
Bye. Goodbye, my Coney Island baby.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.